Well, this morning it is my pleasure to talk about a book from Gary Chapman. It's called The Five Languages of Love, and I think there's one for singles and one for married people, but this book is pretty impressive, and I heard it from Connie, and she was kind enough to lend me the book, and I read it, and I've been using it with all the people that I work there. So there is about probably 10 families plus my four married children that have been benefited from this. So I think it's something wonderful that we need to take in consideration. Most of my friends here know about it, so maybe they're not going to learn something new, but I'm going to tell you some of my experiences, and maybe that's going to enrich you. The language of love are different for everyone, and they are very important because they really fulfill our deepest emotional needs. And the deepest emotional need in a human being is to feel loved. And sometimes we do the best we can, but that's not enough. The need of love is for everyone. It doesn't matter if you're married or you're single or you're old or you're young or you're a child. We all need to feel loved. And when there is lack of love, we struggle even to survive. When our needs are not met, we sort of like stagnate and just trying to deal with this ride of emotions, then we don't reach our potential for God, our potential for good for the world. We're just surviving. The book tells you about an example of this guy. He's a 20-year-old that goes in a car accident, and he's confined for a wheelchair, but he survives, and somebody asks him how you did it, because your expectations for living was not there. And he says that love, that's what get him, the love get him to at least survive. And it was the love of the parents, and then a love, not even a relationship, a romantic relationship, but a friend that she went every day to the hospital and cheer him up and give him hopes and everything. So it is so important for us. Love affects, even our values and our morals, and it's almost like a search of a meaning, a meaning for ourselves and then a meaning for our life, a meaning for our world. So we need to support, our friends, our beloveds, and we need to speak the different language of the primary love language in each one, because sometimes we speak one love language, and I'm going to explain you that, but it's not that the other people speak the same language, so we need to translate. And the funny thing is that it's so amazing that I have friends here that have been friends with them for many years, 12 years or 13 years or something, and until I got this book, I asked them, what is your primary and guess what? I discovered that I didn't know about that. So it's so easy now that I know that Connie loves hugs, so I can be really Latina and hug her as much as I want. And then Judy also likes quality time, so I will invite her at any opportunity. And I discovered just yesterday that Kate is my neighbor, and she likes quality time, so that's going to be so easy. Kate, I'm in the neighborhood. Come and get me in the supermarket. Do you want me to visit you or something? And we'll find out about you, Bethany. I always tell you Stephanie, but I corrected myself. I'm doing better.
I've been called.
So it's really very interesting. And I think one of the greatest happiness is to give the love for people that we really care. But I think it's a great thing to give them what they want, not what we want to give them. So that's anyhow. The love that we have, or the language that we speak, it comes almost from our parents. when a child is comforted and encouraged, I mean, the child has a healthy attitude about, and a happy attitude about life. When the child feels abandonment, or I mean, or is anger or criticized, he even feels anger, hurt, or even hatred. And I've seen that; it's pretty amazing. So sometimes we, as an adult, I mean, to compensate for the lack of love, I mean, we just go into this workaholic thing to achieve success, and that's not even enough. Because there is nothing that can fill that gap of love. When we marry and then we go through a divorce, I mean, every single people that get married is because they love each other and they think, I mean, they can make it together, and then most of the time, I mean, it ends up in a divorce, and maybe that's one of the things that happened, that we have expectation from the other one that is not fulfilling, and that's why relationship, I mean, go astray. So sometimes, I mean, if you ask the couples, I say, well, I mean, I'm trying to do the best I can. I mean, how could she feel that I don't love her or anything? And it's just that she speaks another language. So there are five different kinds of love languages. And the first one is called words of affirmation. And it comes also when we are growing up, our parents usually emphasize the negative instead of the positive. And the positive, it emphasizes the pleasant and joyful and the beauty of life. For parents, sometimes it's difficult to speak the language of the positive, and we need to and we learn that from them. And we use it later on, and so we learn to criticize, to find the negative in other people. So we need to try to delete these negative words. Words of affirmation make a great deal of difference in people. The people who live in or speak words of appreciation are the encouragers. They appreciate, affirm, and uplift people. I love those people. Mm-hmm. If we hear critical words, we know now that they brought more hurt than help, because we interpreted that the lack of affirmation was a lack of love. So we need to choose this strategy for loving anyone and to express love. We can say words like, I love you, thank you for all you have done, you did a great job. And it's divided in words of encouragement, that we inspire and give courage to somebody. That's what it's called, encouragement. Inspire courage in somebody. And this book is talking about that we have all areas of insecurity, and that insecurity is the lack of courage that prevents us from accomplishing things we want to do. And to me, it's one of the most important things of the... It really goes deep into the self-esteem issue. And the self-esteem, I feel, is also coming from our parents. I mean, that we don't even notice, but our parents, I mean, put us like little labels. Instead of saying your room is dirty and untied, you say you are dirty and untied. Instead of saying, can you hurry up or whatever it is, you are always lazy. You're never on time. So we put labels that we carry our whole life. It's pretty amazing. And to get rid of those labels, I mean, we really need to be aware, because it plays in our mind, I mean, for the longest time. Critical parents are in our minds also, and I think they rob so much from our happiness. But the good thing is that once you realize that it's not you or anybody else, it's just your critical parent talking to you, then you can always turn it out or delete the tape. That part of the tape, you can always delete it. which I think is wonderful. I was so strict with myself, and I mean, pushing always hard and everything, until I learned that. I said, no, Daddy, don't keep talking, don't preach. What is the name of the song? Daddy, don't preach. Madonna. It's one of my favorite sentences. Of my mother, I mean, I don't know, my father was very sick, but my mother, I mean, she has been harder to delete than anybody else, so I changed the song to Mommy, don't preach. Because that really freezes us in what we want to do. We lose so much time, I mean, slashing to ourselves, that, I mean, instead of really having the energy to accomplish whatever we want to do. Words of praise, it's really to recognize the accomplishment in somebody else. Looking for the positive instead of the wrongdoing. Praising instead of wrong. Everybody would like, I mean, who had been in a crisis or overcoming an illness or fighting a disease, or a single mother that supports a family, or a single parent that raises a teenager deserves most of the praise. It's true. And we seldom acknowledge these people. That's an everyday effort. That's not 9 to 5, that's 7-Eleven, 24 hours.
7-Eleven?
7-Eleven is 24 hours, right? Or Denny's, or whatever you want to call it. I mean, that's 24 hours. 24 hours. Well,
no, I call it... The point that it's always open, 7-Eleven is always open.
Yeah, I mean...
I got what you meant.
Yeah.
Okay, you're playing with
me. See, this is... She's my friend, don't worry. This is my praising words. I'm using my praising words. That's perfect. Now, we need to use kind words. And this is an English saying that I love, that it says, a gentle answer turns away the wrath. I think it's wonderful. Anger. Or wrath. Wrath, you say. Okay. And sometimes... We can even say I love you, but we don't mean to. And sometimes it's not the words that we use, it's the tone that we use them. We can say to a child I love you when we really don't mean it, because you're angry or something. It's better to go straight forward and say, start with the positive always, and then say, and anyhow, I mean, this is a negative, and anyhow I love you. Then the child will believe. We have to give. Always, I mean, what is in our heart to our children or to somebody else, because everybody knows what we mean. And sometimes we make people crazy just stating one thing when we really mean another one. So I think that's very important. In the aspect of forgiveness, I like what I saw, what I read here. It says that forgiveness is because we need to use this one because nobody's perfect. And everybody did their best they could. And forgiveness is for ourselves, just to get rid of bitterness, resent, and revenge. And we have to understand that that's a past history. That's a past chapter. And we spend so much time consumed by anger or hurt or anything like that, that we lose. I mean, the past contaminates the present, which I think is one of the things that we humans do. And we need to make choices, and love is a choice. And if we choose to love others, our life would be much different. The second language of love is gifts. Everybody likes to have gifts. And sometimes people are not willing to do because they didn't get them. Especially in our generation, there is, I mean, this kind of... Our children, I think they are better to this because we parents are giving our children the most of what everybody had because the world has changed. I mean, we give them video games. Well, we give them gifts instead of our time. And that doesn't work either. But for a friend or for a wife or something. I mean, it's a gift, is a visual symbol of our love. So I like what it said here about the wedding ring, that is a symbol of the, it's an emotional value of the love that a couple has, and I like this one. There are certain gifts that are for a long time and certain gifts that are only for a second. If you give somebody a rocking chair, it will last them for a lifetime, and if your little girl comes with a little dandelion flower, I mean, it lasts for a few hours, but it doesn't matter. It's a sign of love, which I think is lovely. This kind of love requires effort. Some people say, I'm not a gift giver, but we need to make an effort to give somebody we love, I mean, a sign of our appreciation and love. What gift do we give to others? Well, we have to learn about, if we really care and love about somebody, you need to find something that they really love, and it doesn't go to a closet or something else. Or like my grandmother used to say, after Mother's Day, she says, we were very close, and she says, come. So I went there and says, do I smell ugly? Because everybody gave me soaps. Do I smell bad? So that was a very interesting way of seeing things. And I got the picture really very well. She never got a soap from me. Isn't that interesting? I mean, how we perceive things. The third language of love is act of service. I like what it says here, that slavery creates anger, bitterness, and resentment. A wife for 20 years of service, going through a divorce, said that, I tended him in hand and foot, but it was not done with love, but it was out of fear and guilt and resentment. It didn't provide any good thing, and I can relate to that. I mean, it's the role that you need to do, and you are supposed to have it, and it never produces good results. It needs to come from our heart. Act of services will need to come. And that's something, that we friends do for each other. I mean, I help you with your computer. I mean, I trim your, do your garden, or I don't know. You're ill, I go to the supermarket for you. We sometimes, when somebody is ill, we cook for them. I think that's one of the best things we could do for somebody. It says here, and I like it, that allowing to be used, manipulated, or mistreated by somebody is not an act of love. And we need to stop the behavior and say something like, I love you too much that I allow you to treat me this way. Because sometimes it's not even for ourselves, it's for the person who is doing it, that, it's not benefiting that kind of behavior, it's not benefiting them in any way. There is a kind of manipulation that uses guilt. If you don't do this, you don't love me. And that's, we need to be aware of that. There is also coercion and fear. You either do this or I will something. So that's not exactly. Yes.
Where do you think these things come from? The manipulation.
It's a power struggle, and if your recipe.
When a person exhibits that behavior, as you were talking about, people that are critical probably had a critical parent, and they're just running a tape. Because this is a thing I've seen, and unfortunately, a lot of women is this type of behavior. Where they're programmed by observing their mother or something to be manipulative through a variety of means.
Because manipulation means.
Where does that come from?
Manipulation means that you are not able to confront somebody directly. So you do it under the table. So I'm going to say something bad for the recorder. Well, I'll change it. It's doing something wrong, but with a capsule, a sweet capsule in the outside. I think it's one of the most used behaviors, because first of all, women, we're not allowed to be rough and angry and harsh. So we do it under the table. But I have to tell you something. Everything is paid here in this earth. So if you do something to me, I sort like return the aggression in a subtle way that you don't notice, but I'm hitting you as hard as yeah. as you deserve. So that's what it comes from.
So it was the female form of power in relationships where
yes.
that was the only
yes.
thing. Only
this is the allowed. This yeah. is the allowed. I mean, kind of behavior.
Well, that makes sense.
But it's not just females that manipulate.
No, I'm just saying. In my
guilt.
In my point of view, that's all I've seen a
yeah.
lot of that.
Mm-hmm. And that, I mean, for men, the coercion is the normal way of being. I mean, the abusive husband or something like that. I mean, we use those ones. These are really games that people play that are really very destructive. And the good thing about this is that when you know about this and you know what you're doing, you can change your behavior very easily. I mean, it's just that you have a choice. Either you do it directly, I mean, and you handle with chances of success, or you do it under the table, which I think is, I mean, that is not going to give you. Maybe it gives you the result in that minute, but in the long run, it won't serve you. So that's. It's talking here about services freely given. It is by choice, and is out of love and not by fear. And life is full of opportunities to express love by showing it. Sometimes people resent when you want to help them. And it came as a shock for a Latino woman like me that this is very cultural here, that sometimes you offer to help somebody. And I mean, you're really overcoming their space, and maybe they feel that they are not capable enough or something. And I found a wonderful sentence that is going to help me a lot, saying something like, "Could it be helpful for you if I did such and such?" So that people can allow you, I mean, to help them if they want to, and not imposing. I mean, I have to be very subtle with these differences, because in my culture we're not that picky in that way. But in a way I understand that. I mean, it's a cultural thing, and maybe it's because, I mean, Latino families are more into the group and kind of cooperative thing. I mean, if you see families, I mean, especially in the rural areas, I mean, all the children are running, and there is the comadre here and the grandmother there and the aunt there, and they're all overlooking the children. In this culture, it doesn't happen that way. In this culture, it's very much focused in self-sufficiency and independence and everything. So when you ask somebody, it says, "Well, you're not capable enough of handling." Of course, I have good friends that I don't think I'll use that one. Mm-hmm. I mean, they will be very open to say, "No, Pita, thank you," which I think is wonderful. But I learned something about this. So, quality time. That's another language. I think that's the third one or whatever it is. Doing things together. And the amazing thing is the central part of this is togetherness, and that you focus your attention in the other person, giving you undivided attentions. And it's a way that we feel connected to others. It says here that we can be in the presence of others but not feel connected, and put several examples. I mean, a father watching a game with a son, I mean, or the TV or something. I mean, there all the family is reunited, but there is nothing there. And it happens also in the workplace, which I think is very amazing. People, I mean, can work together for 25 years and there is no relationship between them. I mean, it can happen. I mean, it's not my deal, but I had a friend that one day I says, "Are you crazy? Your co-workers are not your friends. This is not in this culture." So I was really disappointed. So I said, "Okay." Now, thanks God, I know that that was not true. I think you can make friends at work, and I think it's very important. For me, I told my parents, and this is one of the most difficult things for them to understand, is that having a house clean and the dishes are clean and the cook is on time and having the clothes clean and everything is not enough to be a good mother. That you need to have time to spend quality time with the children and play with the children and talk to them. And there is a special chapter in the book about children, and especially now that stepfather and children are going back and forth. Even if you give the child, a million gifts, he comes back and says, "Do you think your father loves you?" And says, "Well, I don't know." And I says, "Why?" Because he never asked me how I had been, what I'm thinking, what I'm feeling. And that's so important. Even children notice that there is not, a personal involvement there. So
that's, I think they're the first to notice that.
I know. And children are more sensitive. We just came, we just developed like a turtle. Shell that. We learn to protect ourselves, but the children are still there. Very sensitive. So that's important. So for quality time, there is three things we need to do: hearing, listening sympathetically, and rephrasing, and all the things that we know. Talking is also quality time. If the guy doesn't talk about anything or something, you cannot verbalize your own thoughts and feelings. You don't feel connected to the person, which I think is pretty amazing. For men are very difficult.
So, in other words, if I'm a person who needs quality time, and I'm with a mate who is not very articulate, and we may, spend time in the same physical space, but he doesn't share himself, that would be offensive?
Well, the thing is, that's a learned behavior. I think especially for men, it's very difficult, for them. They are not taught to express their feelings or their thoughts. They're a touchy-feeling guy, Well, guys don't talk about feelings. The L word, it's a very dangerous word. The love word, they usually don't do it. But it's a learned behavior. Maybe just talking about, if you don't tell me what you're feeling or thinking, I don't get to know you. I don't feel close to you. I need to know, what is happening inside here, that to connect inside, not to, just to connect in the peripheral view. And it's difficult for them because it's something that has learned. Maybe the father never talked about anything. We women, I know that we have a brain, a larger part of the brain that is the talk part, so it's easy for us. Funny, because I have a grandchild that she's 6 months old, and the mother is astonished. She says, "Mommy, she's not 3 months, and now she's singing, she's laughing, she's talking, she's bubbling, she's doing things." My elder son, took them almost a year to do what she's doing now when she's 3 months. It's not a different family. It's just, that's the way we are wired. And so for men it's very difficult. So just have patience. And I think just sharing your thoughts and what you feel, I think is always going to help. And that's my feeling.
He probably feels like if he's there around you, he's showing you that he cares about you just by being there,
Yeah, but
that's not how I am. I got that romantic Irish blood in me.
Sometimes we women, it's very funny because we talk about something, so a problem or something that we have at work, or something, and then the guy gives you the perfect recipe, the answer of everything. And then, when you want to talk about the same subject, he says, "Well, I told you what to do, and you're not doing it, so why? What is it?"
Yeah.
And it's very important for us to tell the guy that, "I don't want your answers, I don't want your recipes, I just want you to listen to me, what I'm going on, and I'll figure out what to do. It's not that I'm a child or I need your, I can take your advice, but it's certainly, things, I just want a sympathetic ear that is going to listen to me." That's one of the differences between male and female. There is also another language that needs to be translated very often. This is an interesting life, I think. The last language of love is physical touch, and it comes very early from us, that comes from when we are babies. If we are held and touched and hugged, we develop a healthy emotional life. even the elderly, it's so amazing, and it's really something that opened my eyes. I mean, that never touches them in the nursing homes, and the elderly that are touched in the nursing homes, do much better than the ones are not. And there's an old lady saying, I mean, we touch babies, we pat dogs and everything, but here we sit in loneliness and physical isolation. That's pretty amazing. A hug, a pat on your back, or even, I mean, taking somebody by the shoulders, I mean, communicates that you really care and love the person. What we are going to do is to make a little exercise after the break, just to see which language we speak. But before we go, Mr. Connie goes, I think, I just want to tell you what this is useful for. And this can improve really very much our family connections. We can use this language. We can find what the language of parents are. We can call them and say, Daddy, I love you. And if you have not said that in 30 years, he's going to be a surprise. And probably he's going to say, woo-hoo, woo, something like, uh-huh.
or who is this?
Words of appreciation for our parents could be something like, I mean, I appreciate all you did for me and all your efforts and everything like that. Like Kate was saying about my father putting shoes in 10 children, that was a hard work. It was pretty amazing, Kate. We can always uplift and encourage and have a better relationship with our co-workers if we use these languages. Words of appreciation, I think, is one of the most things, the most language that we speak in the job, that nobody appreciates what they do or something. And the funny thing I want to tell you is this example. I don't know if it's in the other book, Connie, but this is this couple in this. This is, I mean, an elder couple. I mean, they're not very young anymore, but they are fully in love, and they get married together, and they're happy. The first 2 years of marriage, and they are about to get a divorce. And I said, well, I don't know what happened. I mean, we just do love each other so much. And I mean, then he says, I mean, well, what is your complaints? Because that's what you usually, and he says, well, I do everything for her. I mean, I painted the living room, I redo the windows in the bedroom, I cut the bushes. I mean, I'm always helping her, and she just criticizes me. She has become such a harsh and negative lady. And then, I mean, and then he says, what would you have to say? And I says, oh, I used to have so much fun with him. We would try together, and we went to dinner and everything like that. Now he's always busy, and I'm alone in my house watching TV on my own. So this is, and what happens is that for him, acts of services and words of appreciation were her main language, and for her, quality time and hugs, physical touch, it was her main language. So they were together but speaking a completely different language, each one of them. So there was nothing that made them felt loved between them. So once they learned that, I mean, and he says, oh, I'll take you to trips and I'll give you to dinner and everything like that. I mean, then, I mean, and she said, I mean, I appreciate what you're doing for me and everything like that. Just meant the relationship. And that's pretty simple. Mm-hmm. And that's what I've been trying to tell my families and my couples. I mean, it doesn't matter that you speak the other language so well and you show her, I mean, with gifts or something, if she doesn't feel hugged or appreciated or something. And it's pretty, I mean, I think it's one of the most important causes of divorce. That's what I think this talk is very important. Mm-hmm. And that's it. We're going to have a break. I mean, I'm pretty decent with my clock. And Bonnie can leave, and then when we come back, we'll do a little test, and then we know what language to speak. Thank you. Thank you, Peter. Yeah.